There we go. Okay. I would like to apologize, everyone, for the emails that went wild earlier today. Something happened to the email client. And everyone started getting a bunch of emails just about a reminder of today's session. So before we get started, I'd like to apologize for that. Where we left off was, Glow, do you want to just brief the people who are just joining us about the toolbox?
Hi, who just joined us?
Hi, this is Paula from Boston. How are you?
Oh, good. Hi, Paula. Mike wanted me to talk about the Brownfields Toolbox. The Brownfields Toolbox is a website that we put together for people to go out and do some research on how to develop a job training program. The URL is brownfields-toolbox.org. And of particular interest to this group would be along the top, there's a button that says PLC Corner. And if you look in there, you will be able to see the recordings that Mike just turned on the recorder. Those recordings are up there of all the sessions. Session notes are up there of all the sessions, and then different things that some of you guys have sent us. So you might want to just look around in there. There's also a forum where you guys can hold a discussion. No one's ever used it, but, you know, it would be great if you guys did. And then if you want to just kind of explore around, under there's an introduction, there's tons of references, employer resources, all kinds of stuff. So you might want to check that out. And someone just joined us. Can you tell us your name?
Yes. This is Valerie. Hi.
Hi, Valerie.
Is this Glow?
Yep, this is Glow.
Hi, Glow.
We're just talking about the toolbox, Valerie. And,
okay, great.
And we'll put that in the post-session notes so that any of you who you don't have to write down the URLs, we'll make sure everyone gets a copy of that in our session notes.
Okay.
Glow, do you want to also briefly talk about the status of the annual Brownfields Conference that we have for job training?
Every year we have an annual meeting for all the grantees, all the EPA-funded grantees that have job training programs. They could be working on EPA money now, or their funding could be done, and they've been able to sustain their program. The meeting is open to all grantees, past and present. It's going to be August 9th and 10th this year in Alexandria, Virginia. We right now, as of a couple of minutes ago, have 90 participants, and you guys, as long as you are an active PLC member, are all invited to attend, and the opportunity that you have to do this would be that you will be able to network with all the EPA staff, including every region and headquarters staff, and the grantees who are doing the work that you guys are trying to learn how to do. And it's a good meeting. We do it every year. Every year it gets bigger because there's more grantees, and a lot of the more experienced grantees, they keep coming back. We've got people that have been funded since 1998 that have been to every single one of these. So there's on the Brownfields Toolbox, if you look on the left side, there's a link that says under announcement, annual grantee meeting, and the registration form is there. If you're interested, fill it out and send it to me.
Great. And someone just joined us?
Clarice from the Bucks County Community College.
Great, Clarice. I wanted to also, again, double apologize for all those emails everyone got. I try not to harass everyone. But something happened to the email client, and everyone got multiple copies of the reminder today. So one of the things we were going to talk about today, and by the way, the annual grantee conference is great because we have EPA people and we have the attorney from EPA talking about the do's and don'ts and grants and what's permissible expenses and which are not permissible. And Assistant Minister would like to be there also, and we're trying to get some people from the industry to also participate. So, but today we wanted to spend some time talking about certifications, and in previous discussions we've talked about them because certifications are the core of this training, Did someone just join us?
Yes, Adrian Well from Bridgeport.
Pete Kelly.
And where are you from? Kelly? Okay. The certifications really are one of the things that make our participants very valuable in the marketplace. The interesting thing about Brownfield's job training is that to do the work that needs to be done, you have to have certifications. And those certifications, if you don't have it, you can't do the work. If you have it, you're qualified. What it essentially does, if you're a union community where organized labor is very entrenched, it puts you basically at the front of the line. And it does take a while to get some of these certifications, so that if they need someone who's got a 1910-120 HAZWOP cert, they're going to say, who's got one? And you've got people on hand that have it. In fact, we're experiencing this with the oil spill as we speak, where they need people that have hazardous material certifications. And those people who have them, come on down and we can put you to work. It might also be with, in the case of confined space. In the case of weatherization, it might be a BPI certification of some sort or a construction certification. So the fact is that along with just training, which would be different than some other curricula, our participants are going to receive a series of certifications. And those series of certifications they get will be dependent upon the curriculum that they're involved in. Now, when we talk about Brownfield job training programs, we started out with remediation programs. These are programs that have to do with cleaning up pollution, not necessarily in Superfund, but in brownfields. And brownfield sites, of course, are not Superfund sites, but they're not clean either. They're somewhere in between perceived polluted properties that can be cleaned and put on the tax rolls. Well, we originally started with a very heavy emphasis on remediation. Since that time, many of our grantees found that because remediation jobs are a lot like construction jobs, and they're not necessarily full-time all the time, they dual-tracked and they combined remediation with construction jobs. And we've got programs like those West. We got young community developers with many, many grantees that are basically former construction-oriented programs that included remediation in their program and gave them a dual track. So you could actually be doing construction work, but you have the certifications that allow you to work with lead or asbestos, or allows you to go and have this material sites. Most recent development in the last year is this weatherization certification, where it now allows you to go in and do weatherization. And so now we've got basically three tracks. We actually have one fourth track that is a little more obscure, and it's tied to construction and weatherization. It's the whole alternative energy track, which includes solar and wind generation. And so people are also developing programs in wind and solar. There isn't necessarily a certification for those, but they're more geared towards certifications to do with electrical. So with that, overlaying all of those, and we talked about remediation, weatherization, construction, and solar and wind alternative energy, certifications that are associated with each of those main categories. One thing that goes across all of those is health and safety. And no matter whether you're doing remediation or weatherization or you're doing building construction or you're up on a wind turbine or on a roof, you're going to have health and safety certifications to protect you. And those might be confined space, you may be working on ladders, it may be a general construction course or something to do with what they call, it's Federal Register 1910-120, which is the HAZWOP, or how to protect yourself in hazardous materials areas. So as an introduction to that, maybe some of the people that have programs can talk a little bit about some of the certifications that they're offering, and one, whether they're dual track or single track, whether they're working in just EPA remediation, whether they're working in construction that's dual tracked with remediation, whether they've got weatherization going on, and whether they've got solar or wind power. What about, let's see, Paula, do you want to start out and tell us a little bit about your program?
Sure. This is Paula from JFY Networks in Boston, and we started out did a lot of remediation jobs, and we are not a construction program. However, we are in the for this next cycle. We were fortunately funded for a 2-year cycle beginning in October. We will have a dual track of remediation and weatherization. Now, I can say a little bit about the remediations, the certifications for remediation. There's obviously the OSHA 40-hour, but we have included other certifications because it broadens the package, as Mike, as you mentioned, although mostly in the environmental services. And there are, you know, the economy here, there are a lot of environmental service firms and LSPs. So there are different types of projects. So we have had people work as just in asbestos. So we have had an asbestos certification. Not so much lead removal, although we will be doing the RR&P. That'll be coming up. And that's sort of, you know, there's sort of, we're not sure where the track branches, because people seem to be interested in both remediation and weatherization right now. So we'll actually let you know more about how this dual tracking actually works operationally. But we do have the confined space, and I said asbestos, construction safety, and we have, because of our longstanding partnership with one of the COSHAs, doing something that they actually have a grant for, which is an all hazards. So that's biochemical, you know, like explosives. I forget what all of the letters stand for. It's an 8-hour training, and it has a certificate. So it's something to have in pocket so that you can be called onto any one of 6 potential kinds of hazards. And so it's sort of a little combined with the OSHA 40-hour. It's kind of like an additional little specialty.
And what's it called? I didn't quite catch the name.
It's called it's All Hazards. All Hazards. And I will send it to GLOW, because I don't have the complete information of what all of the hazards are.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Things that Paula brings up that's an interesting point, certifications are really... the value of a certification is in kind of the eyes of the employer or the holder. There are various types of certifications. There's the federally based certifications, and these are, when we talk about, and we'll talk about this not today, but in the next session, the RR&P, renovation repair for lead, the asbestos certifications. These are originally handed down by the federal government, and OSHA 40-hour, which is a hazardous waste site. Anyone that's going to go onto a contaminated property, we can almost liken it like federal laws. These are federally mandated regulations. The what had to be included in these courses to get the certification were published in the Federal Register. This 1910-120 is kind of the Bible for waste sites. What you have to teach, the courses, the people who are teaching these courses have to be certified and go through very specific training so that they're what we would call federally mandated. Most of the OSHA courses, asbestos, lead, now the RRMP course, this renovation, repair, confined space, they're federally administered. Then we have state-administered certifications, and these may be certifications that your particular state is issuing outside the federal government. Now, the rule has always been states can be more stringent than the federal government, but not less stringent. And so, for example, in OSHA, for in the old right to know, in asbestos, states can adopt to enforce their own regulations. And if the state chooses to enforce the regulations, for example, in lead or asbestos, they will have state requirements and state certifications. So rather than being a federally getting a certification that's more national, you're getting one specifically in state. California may have very specific requirements. We certainly know in the case of building codes, because of their specific requirements, because of their environmental requirements, they on a heavy emphasis on hydrocarbons, they may have certain things in their courses that are going to be more stringent than everyone else. So we're going to have certain states that are going to have it. You may even have some county certifications. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, Mike, this is Paula again. The building codes actually vary here by city, as you can imagine. So
you're even having state, city.
Yes, state, city, not so much. Counties aren't so much. We don't have much county government here, but yes, and that throws some complications into the mix, and also the fact that we're so close to Rhode Island. We're close, and we're also close to New Hampshire as well. But I think in Boston we're closer to Rhode Island, and the licensing and certification differentials in asbestos and lead between Massachusetts and Rhode Island are there are things that we need to pay attention to because they're not transferable.
And not only that is sometimes states will have agreements that if one is good in Illinois, it's good in Indiana, but others, they want to collect the fees, and you may have to get a certification in Illinois and one in Indiana. So
that's more likely the case.
They all want the fees. They all want the fees.
So,
budgets are down. They especially want them now.
So they figure out a way of, our state is special than everyone else's. So you have in that issue. And I guess the question is, to all of you, is when if you're going to teach in a certain area, for example, if you're going to be doing asbestos removal or lead removal in remediation, you're going to have to work from the state up, aren't you? Or maybe from what Paula said, from the city up, and find out exactly what certifications are needed. And maybe the best way to do that is to talk to the employers and ask them what certifications are going to be needed. This is for people who are just starting programs. Mm-hmm. You're going to have to find out what type of certifications you're going to have. In weatherization, now it's actually going to nonprofits or private. The BPI certification, for example, is becoming an adopted certification. Are y'all in Boston using the BPI certification now? States are adopting that as a standard for weatherization.
It is in process. They're not using it for weatherization right now. They are using it for, it is the gold standard for auditing, but not necessarily for weatherization, because they're looking at it in sort of a tier. The threshold for BPI certification, both for experience and for passing that exam, are pretty, they're pretty stringent. And so the learning curve is the learning curve has posed some problems for certainly for the population that we target.
May I second that remark?
Okay.
Yes,
I mean
that.
Big time. I really have fought a battle about that because the tendency to adapt BPI for everything is extremely detrimental to what we're trying to do in getting people who have spotty work histories into a career ladder. So we cannot be pushing down the BPI building analyst certification to weatherization installers or trainers or technicians who are basically doing weather stripping, caulking, changing light bulbs, which has nothing to do with the building analyst certification. So if we continue in that vein, we're going to find ourselves not qualifying anybody to get out of the basic first step on the ladder. So we have to really be careful about the unintended consequences of exclusionary practices.
Excellent.
Well
now,
said.
What, how are you approaching this? Are you going to try to issue a certificate of some sort that says...
Well, we issue our own certificate, but basically we developed our program around the WAP requirements. That's the Weatherization Assistance Program. And in every state, and from the feds, as a matter of fact, there's always been a spec as to what was to be done under this WAP program. So we know exactly what the tasks are. And we have been working with our local CAP agency that's been administrating that program for, I guess, about 30 years. And with them, designed it, and also with Siemens Building Technologies, who is installing those measures for our local housing authority. So we're pretty comfortable in knowing what should be in the curriculum and developed our own set of slides and exercises and put in a 40-hour carpentry piece to make sure that people knew what they were doing. I think the approach is a bit different. We want to get people on to a career ladder. We're not trying to prove anything by having them pass stringent tests that are basically cram courses for an audit exercise and for field testing. That's what the BPI is for. And even and they will tell you, people who are authorities in BPI, from the BPI Institute itself, they will tell you that about 40% of the people who take the test pass. That's not the kind of climate we can put our low-income students into.
You know...
That is quite. We've had the same experience and probably the same conversations, possibly
mm-hmm.
even with the same people.
Yeah, right.
Possibly even with the same people to do that. There are several different types of BPI certifications.
Absolutely.
So depending on their single family, there's multifamily,
mm-hmm.
and it's also kind of ignoring a whole other side of things. I mean, the WAP money is what's available right now,
right.
but there's also a commercial side of things, which is still yet to be developed. So it's a market that we're kind of looking for, we're looking into. But I've also talked to people who have taken our trainer has taken he's taken the prep for the BPI exam. And
mm-hmm.
one of the things that we discovered was that the folks who did the best, this is sort of quick and dirty research, the people who have had a lot of experience in HVAC.
Mm-hmm.
And even those guys said it was, they found it tough. But HVAC, there's something about probably because there's something equivalent to learning the building envelope that you get with, you know, that, and it's also the experience. I think that you really need to have, this is what we determined, that you need to have had a fair amount of experience to guide you through successful preparation for the BPI exam. With no experience, you're just setting, it's a setup for failure.
Well, we have run a couple of BPI sessions, and what we did was mainly aim for contractors to come in and get their BPI
mm-hmm.
qualifications because, you know, basically we're a community development corporation, and we're really interested in having the small businesses extend their marketing to other areas. They can't just stay with their 2 feet in the same shoe.
Right,
and
but
hope
they do
to,
have experience, right?
Yeah, and they have experience. Yeah. So that was one target that we had, and it was successful. Because we did a math review beforehand, added an extra day to the course,
mm-hmm.
and did a Sunday morning 4-hour review that didn't involve the instructor but involved people from our organization who had worked on a kind of system of note-taking and presenting the outline so that people could, like, catch up, ask a lot of questions, and get through because our guys are already BPI certified. But the next step was to hold, you know, classes in the evening so the contractors could get into them on the weekends, and then we took our time in scheduling the proctoring. But the key was really to lay it out a little bit longer because most of the BPI presentations are really short and
mm-hmm.
very, very abbreviated and very intense, and they're trying to get people to swallow a lot of information in a short period of time. But rather than have this turn into a discussion only about BPI, I think it's really important if we're all in on this conversation and we've got Mike to kind of carry the water. Just be sure that one of the things that we get to do is to have input into the committees that are preparing for the national weatherization qualifications. And that those are going to be published on the 30th of September. And I think that if we miss the turning point, I got a chance to talk to one of the directors from the White House, but we all need to talk to whomever. I don't know who else you can talk to. But really make sure that this input gets put in.
Well,
because
you know,
otherwise we're going to wind up with something that just isn't going to work.
Well, an excellent opportunity. We're going to have the Assistant Administrator of EPA at our annual workshop, and I think we need to bring this up. As an important issue, because one of the things he asked us is, do you have any issues?
Mm-hmm.
And I think you've brought up an excellent point of our target group is not engineers and the BPI types.
Mm-hmm.
They're people that are going to be doing they're where the rubber meets the road. They're going to be
mm-hmm.
we're going to be putting in caulking and insulation and we're talking about construction workers.
Yeah,
who don't
mm-hmm.
necessarily need that level of academic training.
But what's great about having it there is that it is a kind of a carrot for those who want to go further. And after
right.
a few months, I mean, a lot of the guys who come out of our courses work for a few months and then take the BPI, and they succeed. But they succeed because they have, you know, they have 4 weeks of underpinning with us. And then they've got, you know, their employers who are overseeing their work for another month or so or two, and they go out and get this BPI thing, and then they become crew chiefs, which is really nice for them. It's a nice intermediary step, and then they can become auditors as well. So it's a real demonstration of how career ladders work. And I think that what's happening is that people have become intellectually lazy. They don't want to sit down and look at what comprises a good weatherization basic course and take the time to say, okay, well, you've done this. That looks good. Let's see what somebody else has done. Does that look good? And can we give the rubber stamp to these groups because they've developed something that's appropriate and adapted to their populations? If they're not going to do that work, then leave us alone.
Early on in the environmental movement and training, what the trainers did was they said, here are our graduates, here are the skills and knowledges that they have.
Mm-hmm.
And the employer, because the guidance was not there from the federal government,
right.
so the employer would say, I see your skills and knowledge, I see how you've trained them. Essentially, you made your own certification. And
mm-hmm.
I like these people, and I like their skill set.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'll hire them based on that. And we actually encourage people to provide them with that set of skill and knowledges so they would know.
Mm-hmm.
And it almost sounds like that's where you're at now until they come out with some federal register standards of this is what an installer shall be trained.
Yeah, right.
Well, this is Warren from Kansas City,
mm-hmm.
and we're using, or we're about to use, a weatherization technician certification from BPI. It's not the building analyst certification, but it's now required by the city of Kansas City to do weatherization work for the city. So it's becoming the local standard. And so I just want to be clear. I understand that you're talking about a BPI building analyst certification, but this one is adapted more to the installer. And
well,
so anyway.
I went down last week and I didn't see anything on their site that said weatherization installer. There are two new ones that I did see. One of them has to do with insulation.
Well, I don't think that's what this is. It was adapted, from BPI by a local organization, the Metropolitan Energy Center. But I understand that it's a BPI certification. I haven't tried to look it up on their website. So anyway,
I've been looking for that thing for a year.
It doesn't exist.
It was something they were referred to as BPI Light, and but I don't seem to, I keep hearing that it's coming, but I haven't seen it. So if you can point me in the direction of where you found it, I'd be really happy.
Well, I understand that it's something that exists with BPI but was adapted, so does that mean that BPI has validated the adaptation?
I don't know. That's a question. I had assumed this was a BPI product, but
no, it's not. I don't think it is a BPI product. But you know,
I don't.
I was on there just last week because we are becoming a BPI school, if you like, certified organization, and so I go on there often to update our file. And I didn't see anything that was said. Was called weatherization.
It's called a BPI installer cert, and this certification is intended for those who are new to the field, have little experience, although not limited to this type of person, with the house as a system and will be doing hands-on insulating, air sealing.
Yeah.
It is still in the development phase.
That's right.
Have more understanding. No written test, hands-on application on a prop with the ability to test how well the insulation air sealing was installed.
That I did see, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, this is from Matthew Anderson, Building Performance Institute.
Mm-hmm.
So,
that sounds like essentially what the local program is going to end up being.
And it could be that they're on that path, but it brings back the issue of perhaps we need to have input in that to the extent we can.
The other thing is that the laborers' union locally is developing a classification for weatherization workers, and I believe they're going to base it on that same certification that you just described. So it's just becoming the local standard for weatherization installers. So
that's LIUNA.
I'm sorry.
Is it LIUNA? Laborers
yes.
Union.
Yes.
Yes. Okay.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if anyone finds more about this topic, if they could email it to me, I'll send some post session notes and just respond to me, and we'll send it out to everyone, and I'll put in some material from BPI. Maybe we can research this out to see exactly what's out there and what the status is. The second item is, I think, at the annual meeting when we have a chance to talk to the EPA administrators, we can bring up this whole issue of how weatherization, EPA, and our target group can fit together to make something doable, because the last thing we want to do is train ourselves out of the market where the certifications they're developed won't fit our target groups.
Right.
And so they really can't participate. And I think that's exactly correct.
Well, the other thing, if as long as we're doing that, I would I want to say, and I think I sent this article a while back, well, not a while back, but a few months back with the RRMP, and that I'd be interested in whether contractors, whether people are experiencing any pushback from contractors about the RRMP rule.
They have got pushback. Yeah. In fact, they delayed the implementation enforcement to October 1st. Mm-hmm. We'll talk about more RRMP next session.
Okay.
That's what we're going to do in the next session. They basically are enforcing it. It's in effect, but they're not going to enforce it till October 1st, and they are definitely getting pushback on the training side of that.
Indeedy.
Well, hold that thought for 2 weeks.
Okay.
And we're going to convene again. We promise we're going to keep these at 30 minutes. So we'll do some post-session notes, maybe exchange some emails, and we'll talk to you all in a couple of weeks. And I'll be sure to send lots of reminders, not too many, but just enough.
Right amount.
Everyone's there, right.
Okay.
And,
all right.
Anyone get any information, just send it over, and we'll share with the group. So thanks for participating this week, y'all.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Bye-bye, y'all.
Thank you.
Bye. Bye.